This morning we're going to be talking about the power of one. And the purpose of this lesson, and I'm going to try to run through here again. I've got quite a few slides to try to skip through. But I try to, and I've been trying to, the last few lessons that I've done, to help us to be encouraged. Being encouraged as a Christian is an extremely important thing for us, because I talk about every time I've done a lesson, and we hear it from others in class, in our conversations that we have in class, and when you talk to brothers and sisters outside of this building, that it's a difficult world that we live in. And I want us all to be encouraged, because as Abe's talked about, we need to be excited, we need to be happy, we need to show that God is in our lives, and we need to show the reason why we're happy about that is because with Him in our lives, we should be happy for all things that we face. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to have a bit of introduction on this, but what I want to gain from this will be leading into Abe's lesson for the second part of our assembly time this morning, is the power of one. Each person in here is a single person, and each person in here has the capability to do some great things. I didn't spend any time listing all the great things that we can look at through human history of how just one person changed human history by a single act, by a single decision. We see our leaders all the time. We've seen and read about it in wars. We've read about it in the formation of new countries, new territories, for good and for bad. One person with an ink pen can sign something on a piece of paper that can affect everybody else, sometimes for all time in human history. So the power of one is something that we really need to look at. Let's get started. A little bit here on the perception of one. We know one is not a big number. We start counting, and the first thing that you say, most kids don't come up and say, okay, Mom and Dad, I'm going to count the numbers. Zero, one, two. They don't say zero. They just start with one. One means a lot of things, and it means a very simple number. It's just anything past zero is pretty much what we get to. There's a song that says that one is the loneliest number, and I didn't want to go into that song because I didn't know how much of the background of it to look at. I was talking to Dad, and we both felt that was probably an okay song, but you never know with music today. And sometimes when we're just down to one of something, if you're married and you ever have your wife or husband call you up and say, hey, I'm at the grocery, do you need anything? Well, how many times have you said, well, we've only got one of this or that? One typically means, hey, we're about ready to run out. You might want to address this thing. So we need to be making sure that we've got plenty of it there. I've also got up here, so much of our lives necessitate a plurality that there's just one is typically not enough. It's a lot of text there to try to say quickly on a Sunday morning, but if we don't have a whole bunch of things, if we just have one left of those things, it's typically not enough. You look in your purse and you just have a dollar. You look in your wallet, all you have is a dollar. It's like, well, if you don't have a debit card or a charge card with you, that could be a problem. If you look up in the cupboard again, going back to the things we've got at home, and you say, we're going to have to fix dinner tonight, and all of you with a fairly big family could say, we've only got one of this or that, you know, that could be a problem. So today we want to look at the number one and see it does have power. Again, keep in mind that the purpose of this lesson, at least as I've tried to prepare it, is to help each of us individually, which is just one person. If I point around this room, I'm just pointing to one person. I want you all to see that you do have power. And it may not be easy to see sometimes. Kyle liked this. I kept thinking about him the whole time. I put all the zeros and ones up there. I'm typing it like, Kyle, I love this. Kyle, I love this. He probably could care less about it, but it was interesting for me. We've all seen computers, no matter of our age, we've seen zeros and ones. It's been in movies, it's been in text. You run binary code means you have zeros and ones, and there's millions and millions of them often in applications for our computers. This computer is right now processing a whole bunch of zeros and ones just to show this to you. When you look at your phone, it's running through a bunch of series of zeros and ones to tell the phone what it's doing. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's what it does. We see this with computers, so just what is the deal with those ones and zeros? Well, pretty basic. They're formatted in such a way that they tell the computer how to turn things on and off in a certain series. Show this, don't show this, show this, don't show this. And thousands and thousands and thousands, maybe even millions of those happen a second. So every one that you might see in binary code says, turn this on right here. But what about the zero? No, it says turn it off. So when you see all those ones and zeros, it's just the computer understanding, I need to turn this piece of data on, I need to turn this piece of data off, and it's going, psh, and it's going just crunching millions and millions of numbers just to do that. So, going to a little bit of mathematics, bring this back to some of you that haven't done math in a while. What's greater, one or zero? Well, one is greater than zero. Therefore, from the very beginning, one has power. Continuing on. It's hard to see the power in just one as we try to teach. Again, looking around the room, each person is an individual. Each individual is one person. As we try to teach others, and I said there's only one left of something, we might feel that. We're only one person. What can we do? Well, we are just one. The world is made of so many who care little about God or religion. That idea of many that I've got single quotes right there. Many is more than one. And we look out this window, we can see many people out there. So this idea can be daunting. And I've also got the little small there. Sometimes we feel small because we look at all the people that we face and that one person that we are makes us feel diminished. We just don't feel very capable. And so there's also many that maybe they've known religion, they've come into religion, maybe they've even been baptized in part of the Church of Christ, the Church of the New Testament. But they're disappointed by human religions because so many churches, whatever their makeup is run by human beings. And if they're not following God's Word carefully enough, they are individuals. And just like I said, the course of human history is often changed by one person's mistakes, one person's actions. And many people are led away by human religions or religions that are held up by one person. So we talk about the game plan. How can we realize the power of one? We have to know the game plan. At work, I've been going through this whole... We've been doing a mini site for one of our clients that's in the healthcare business. And we've been doing this e-playbook. They have a playbook of things that healthcare centers, that like nursing homes, can do to try to help their staff keep an eye on their residents, but making sure that they're always healthy, that they're up to code, they're not neglecting them. If there's issues, they can watch out for them. They call that a game plan because they really do have to do it like sports. They've got a list of things to do, and they try to make sure that they're taking care of them. So what are the game plan rules here? Well, as we realize the power of one, we have to know the game plan, and that is the conditions of the world. We look out in our game plan individually. We're a player on this team. What do we have to look out for? What is the condition of the world? What are the challenges of us as Christians? What are we going to have to be facing? Is it going to be easy to get through the game, or is it going to be a challenge for us? What's the strength of our opposition? Do you have a team that's all these big defensive players that are so huge you're never going to be able to get around them? Or can you see weaknesses? There's always weaknesses out there. There's reasons that the world sees us as fools. It may not be true, but the world sees us that because they see physical. They don't see spiritual. And so when they look at us as one individual trying to tell them about spiritual things, it didn't make sense to them. And we also have to know the game plan, and because there's some things that belong to God. Continuing on, conditions of the world. So what kind of world do we deal with as one person here? So the unrighteous world that doesn't know or want to know God, that's one of the things that we have to deal with. Either they don't know about God or they don't want to know about God. They care about the physical. They care about themselves. So the world, just as we may be one, individually they are one too, and they want the best for them, and they want it now. There's also, we have to deal with one, as there's many religions. So many different religions, all again, affected by one person, one idea. A world of sinful indulgences. A culture who believes in evolution. We hear about this so much. We talk about evolution, but in that conversation that we have with people, that's them trying not to accept God whatsoever. And also we deal with this as probably the most important thing of all these on this list. A society abandoning the role of husband, wife, and children, or a family, for divorce, remarrying, ungodly, unnatural lifestyles, and unauthorized marriages. I've talked about this in some of our classes that we've been having on Wednesdays. You look at the lifestyle choices people are making and the lifestyles people think they have as one person, and it's an effect of how they were brought up. If they don't have a husband, they don't have a father, they don't have a male figure in their lives, they only know the attributes of their mother. Or in the cases where the father may be the custody of children in a divorce, they don't know the role of their mother. And so you see these people raised up in this perverted view of what one person is. And so you see why the world has gotten to the way it has. So some more on the conditions of the world. In Psalms 53, 2-4, it says, God looks down from heaven upon the children of men, to see if there are any who understand, who seek God. And it says, every one of them is turned aside. They have together become corrupt. There is none who does good, no, not one. Have the workers of iniquity no knowledge to eat up my people as they eat bread and do not call upon him? Remember those binary numbers? What was the difference between 1 and 0? Zero was turned off. One was turned on. This says, every one of them is turned aside. There is none who does good. So in binary code, zero is pretty much the way of man. And there are none that live up to what God wants. Continuing on with the challenges of a Christian. As one person, we are responsible for some things. We are responsible for remaining faithful. We are responsible for overcoming rejection. Remember, as one person trying to do God's Word, we're going to go out there in that game plan. We're going to face opposition. What if we get rejected? Are we going to bounce off somebody and then just give up? Or are we going to be like some of the college games that we see? Maybe some saw yesterday. Some of these people run into all these defensive people. They get pushed back and they just run around them. We just keep on making forward progress. What about seeing past what we see? That kind of might sound confusing. Our eyes are physical. Our eyes look physically. But as spiritual beings, we have to see beyond that. And we'll get to a passage later in the lesson that will talk about that. We need to be responsible for trusting in God and Christ. As one person, that's going to be our power. And we'll see that revealed here shortly. And not losing heart. Staying true to the thought of, or staying true through our families, though our families are not. Get it down here eventually. And we are certainly responsible for our own salvation. Certainly not saying that God gives us the opportunity to save ourselves, but we know from the New Testament it says, work out your own salvation with trembling and fear. Challenges of a Christian. Psalms 26-8, it says, now I know the Lord saves His anointed. He will answer for them, or answer him from the holy heaven with saving strength of His right hand. And he contrasts that, the saving strength when the Lord is saving His anointed. It says, some trust in chariots, some in horses. But we will remember the name of the Lord our God. Remember when the Egyptians came across the sea? They thought with those chariots and horses that they were going to go kill those people that got away from them. Or at least get them back to Egypt and put them back to work. And then it finishes up there. They have bowed down and fallen. Just like those Egyptians fell there on that in that water. But we have risen and stand aright. So the power of one, again, has strength behind it. The opposition is strong. We talked about the game plan. Christians face the following as one person. Those who embrace sinful lifestyles. Those who know nothing about this life. We face doubters and scoffers. People who simply don't care. How many of you have tried to go there? I heard people talking, I think Jenna brought up the challenges, and other Brenda and Jenna both talked about the seed when we scatter that and how it's difficult for us. And sometimes we aren't comfortable with that. There's doubters and scoffers everywhere. Those are the people that are either choking out the seed from growing or simply never take root. Opposition is strong. People who simply don't care. I don't care. I'm happy with living life and having a good old time. Living it up. Going for the gusto. People who don't want you to bother them. Leave me alone. I don't care about your spiritual stuff. I don't care about this God you talk about. Let me watch my TV and drink my beer and live life like I want to. That's all I care about. Completely missing the fact that their spirit is still alive in their own bodies. And in opposition, people who don't want you to change those around them. Nah, don't mess with my family. Don't. You ever think about that? Sometimes we talk to people who may be willing to accept God in their lives, but because their family is so against it, they know that it will affect how things are for them, that they don't want you involved with them. And we see that. I can go around this room and I know for sure there are people in here that deal with those kind of situations. Don't mess with my family about this God stuff. Leave it off there. In Psalm 7, verses 14 through 16, it says, behold, the wicked bring forth iniquity. So a product of them, their oneness, is bringing forth iniquity. He conceives trouble and brings forth falsehood. He makes a pit and dug it out and has fallen into the ditch which he made. His trouble shall return upon his own head, and his violent dealing shall come down on his own crown. Just like we are one, we are turned on, we are trying to do what God wants. The wicked is one person too. They are our opposition, and they are doing these things, what you see up here from Psalm 7. The world sees us as fools, and as one doing the will of God, what does the world see? It sees people who give up, who don't allow fun. Again, basically saying, you're not doing the physical things we expect you to. You're not going to the bars. You're not going over to see this girl or that guy and hanging out with them or shacking up with them or whatever the case may be. This is foolishness. Why aren't you doing that? It's good fun. The world sees as not doing the will of their will, but doing the will of God. People who waste time talking to non-existent beings and trying to reach non-existent places. If your mind is totally physical and you are that one person in the world, They look inside these windows and say, look at all those people. They could be watching TV right now. They could be sleeping in. They could be doing all these things that cater to the physical body. But they're not. They're doing these things that we don't understand. And the world doesn't know that. The Bible is very clear from Old Testament to New Testament. It says the foolishness of the world looks at God and is like, this doesn't make any sense to us because they are not looking in the spiritual way. Also, the world sees us as fools, people who are narrow-minded, not accepting and loving. Why don't you accept this lifestyle? That's just not very nice. And they go on and on and on. Well, what does God say about it? As one individual, as that turned on switch there in that binary code, how are we turned on? What's our source of power? Also, those who waste time in church, why are we going to that building again? They don't understand it. Or people poisoned by the lies of righteous. Again, I put that in there because there are people that started off doing what was right, but then there was those that said they were righteous and were not. And they led, again, that one person individually for those unrighteous people living lives that they shouldn't have been living was affecting others. And that's never a positive thing. 1 Corinthians 1:18 says, for the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. So if you're dying, you're living in this world, sure, you're doing what you want to. You're getting everything that you want physically out of this world, but you are dying. And remember that if you don't have a spiritual hope after this life, there's nothing left but death. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. We talked about the power of one. Where does that power come from? It comes from God. 1 Corinthians 2:14 says, but the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him. The natural man, the person that's of this world, this person that sees around them and sees themselves fleshly. For they are foolish to him, nor can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. Spiritual has so much to do with it. The power of one, the God of all things. For one to survive, we have to know God to have strength, have faith, have power, to overcome those around us, to trust, to receive grace, and to reach heaven. So as that one person, each one of us around this room is one person, if we want to survive, not just have a good time here on earth, but if we want to survive fully into eternity, strength, faith, power, overcoming those around us, trusting, receiving God's grace, and reaching heaven, that will be true survival. Ecclesiastes 3:14 says, I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. It doesn't say that I know whatever God does will last for a short time. Remember when we talk about the difference of time, the New Testament says that life is basically just a vapor. It appears for a short time and then just vanishes away. It's just the life of human beings. But with God, when He does something, it shall be forever. It does not change. Nothing can be added to it, nothing taken away from it. Well, how is that possible? How can you not add something or take something away from it? It's because it's eternal. It's forever. When something is that long-lasting, there's no mathematics to it. It just lasts on and on. God does it that men should fear before Him. Ecclesiastes 8:17 says, then I saw the works of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. So it's saying, we may be strong if we are connected to God, but we are not of God's mindset. The power that He has given to us is still not going to be able to let us see into Him and know His great majesty. Some of you may remember this, and I love seeing projectors because that always meant an entertaining afternoon at school. I love that sound. Remember when we were in school, those of you that actually saw these, and you hear that, and you're like, sweet, we don't have school today, or we don't have class. I'm afraid, I tried to explain this to my kids the other night, and I think they were trying to figure out, what is that thing? It's not a DVD, it's not a DVR, it's not a Bluetooth, or no, whatever. Thank you, Blu-ray disc. What is it doing there? Well, back in the old days, there was reel-to-reel tape, and there's a whole bunch of pictures inside that tape, and it would project on there. You know, I mentioned football yesterday, and it's the season. If you like football, especially college, it's that time of year. One of the things, and we were just watching Remember the Titans, a really good movie about a school that was trying to have a football program and had some bad things happen. It was a pretty decent show. But coaches in football watch tapes. They don't maybe watch tapes on reel-to-reel. They've got digital now, so they can turn it on very easily. But why do they do that? When we hear on ESPN, they say, well, I was watching tapes all last weekend or all week, and this is what I found out. Well, why do they do that? They record every time they're playing somebody, they record how their games went. And they look to see, how does this defensive person react here? How does this offensive person react here? And they analyze the entire game. So if they're prepared, come game day, they can say, I know what this guy's going to do. I know what this guy's going to do. The fact that they can look and analyze, the more they do that, the less surprised they will be at game time. So it says we're no different. Let's spin the reels to know what we're dealing with and how to be a power of one. We have to watch the tapes too. So more scripture here for us. We're looking at the opposition now, the power of one. I'm going to keep moving on. Newton's law of motion. Sometimes, even though I may not be the best, have been the best of students in school, I keep on trying to be a teacher here with some of you guys. So if you know what these are, you can skip past these things. Newton had three laws of motion, and I only have the first and third one here. Law one, and we use this for other things, talking about inertia and things like that. But law one, an object at rest will stay at rest unless an unbalanced force acts upon it. So as when we're talking about opposition, we're thinking about that power of one that we are. If something is just sitting here, if I put this pin right here, and you guys see it sitting there, it is going to stay there for all time unless I knock it off there. Unless a tornado comes and tears this building down. Unless something else bumps into it, it's just going to stay there. But if I come over here and I'm talking to you guys and I get carried away and I throw my hands out like this and it flies through the room, I'm not going to have my pin because another force has acted upon it. The third law of Newton's law of motion is an object that is in motion will not change its velocity unless an unbalanced force acts upon it. So, if I throw something in space, it's going to continue to keep going until it runs into a planet, a rock, gets pulled into a gravitational pull or something like that. Same thing with that pin. I could throw that up there, and if I could get it past the Earth's gravity, it is going to keep spinning through space until it hits one of those things. We talk about that a lot with just inertia, that things tend to keep in motion until they get hit by something else. But I want us to think about that. Remember, that one that we keep talking about, that one that every one of you are, if you're doing something positively, if you're trying to be a spiritual person, nothing is going to stop you unless you're acted upon by an opposite force, a negative force. Well, what do you think that opposite force is? It's the world. It's the sinful human beings that we deal with. It's the people that are not receptive to the message of God, to the message of Christ. And as much force as we may put out there, they typically will have just as much, if not more, force. And that will change that velocity. As Christ's children, what object could negatively affect us in the life from the law three above? And we just talked about that. So our opposition is Satan. Revelations 12, 7 through 9 kind of goes back and looks over the Bible. It says, war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought. But they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I think we've heard people talk about this verse before. In case you're not sure exactly who the devil is, because we talk about the devil, we talk about Satan, and in Genesis we've been talking about the serpent. How do you know who that is? Well, you can go to this passage and see. It tells you every name that we know Satan to be. He's that great dragon. He's that serpent of old. He's the devil. He's Satan. He's the deceiver of the world. And where was he cast out? One individual that we all are is facing that opposition because all this description of this one person was not cast to Jupiter, was not cast to another planet or another galaxy. He was cast here on this very planet that we live on, and he is our opposition. He is the person that is going to be going against the grain of everything that we try to do. So when we talk about our opposition, it's just not our neighbor, it's not our family members, it's not our brothers and sisters. We are going to war with Satan himself. And so when I want to tell you, again, the lesson here is to be encouraged. Be encouraged, because if you have any success, you are going against Satan and making progress. And if you can do that, that's amazing. It's not that you're going against a single person that you know. Back to Newton's third law of motion. How does Satan behave as an object? How do we behave as an object? Do you see a potential for opposition here? Individually, we are an object. We are an object of God's, spiritually embodied. You can see it as a sphere in motion trying to make progress. Satan and all those, it talked about his angels being cast down here with him, his disciples. It talks about the people that he affects, all objects against us, these battling forces. So there's why we see the opposition. So who is stronger or larger? So one reason we don't see the power of one is due to the opposition we face. Alone, we are still one. So one times zero equals what? If I asked you guys to go around the room, you know the answer to that, right? One times zero is one, right? No, it's zero. If we are on our own, one person, individually around this room, and all we are is that person, we have no other influences, we are zero. And because spiritually speaking, we can't do everything to change anyone. And if we don't have God, we are, again, zero. So think our opposition is weak. Consider this. Genesis 1:31. I wanted to spend more time focusing on this. And there is a lot that I want you to think about here. Not many verses, but just think about this, some of the things we face. In Genesis 1:31, we just started the Old Testament. We just started the very first book of the Old Testament in the Bible. After making man, it says God saw everything that He had made, and indeed it was very, what? Very good. Everything God did was good. He's already made everything. It's all been approved. He's got His stamp of approval. God has made man and woman, and they are good. Genesis 3:1 comes along, just a couple chapters later. It says, now the serpent, who we just talked about, said to the woman, has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? In just seven verses, Genesis 3, mankind sins. You go from God's perfect creation, God's flawlessness, mankind being deemed good, to here comes Satan. Satan's already affecting the lives of those one individuals. Adam was one, Eve was one, Satan was one. He causes both of them to sin. Gets Eve to take of the fruit of the tree of knowledge. She does something God said should not happen and that she would be punished for it. She likes the food. She gives it to Adam. They both sin. So what's Satan's score? 2 out of 2. 100% success rate for Satan from the very beginning. Two people on earth both sinned. Satan's victorious. Good becomes bad from the dawn of humanity. But does it stop there? Nope. Same family. Genesis 4, 1-2. Cain and Abel born. Two more humans. Two more potentials for good things to happen. Genesis 4:8. Now Cain talked with his brother Abel, after we see them giving sacrifice back to God. And it came to pass when they're in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and what? He killed him. Two more people in that family. Two more, hopefully, good people in that family. We certainly know that Abel was doing good. Cain was not. He killed his brother. In just 8 verses of Genesis 4, mankind sins again. You've got 4 people on earth. 3 of them have sinned already. Score 3 of 4, 75% success rate for who? For those individuals? No, for Satan. Remember, the battle is against Satan. 1 Peter 5:8 says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, who is the devil? Isn't he the great dragon? Isn't he the one serpent in the Old Testament? Walks about like a small kitty, seeking where he might get a little bit of bite to eat. We all like cats, right? Some of them like to strangle cats or run from them. But most of us like a kitty, a little cat. We say, I know others have cats at home and things like that. They walk up to you and they're so happy to see you and they rub up against you and they're like, oh, please feed me. I'm only showing you this kindness because I want you to feed me. And we're like, oh, sure, I'll give you some food. We know some people really, really are affected by that because you see some really big cats from time to time. It doesn't say that Satan is a nice little house cat, a nice little tomcat or a little kitty that will sit up with you and purr. It says he is a roaring lion, seeking whom he may eat. He wants to destroy us. He wants to kill us. He wants to savagely tear us apart for his own happiness, for his own individual well-being. The power of one, Satan's power of one, is to take your power and consume you. He doesn't want you to be alive anymore. He does not want you to see God. So think about that. Our opposition is Satan. And again, as I said, he's not a kitty cat or a zoo animal. He is a wild, hungry, angry, crafty, cunning, savage beast, and we are his only food. Think about that. Satan has no other nourishment except for our souls. If he can take us away from God, that is more for him to consume. We are not just around for him to play with. He already is destined for an eternity in the lake of fire. But for now, he has access to us. Matthew 4:3 says, now when the tempter came to him, talking about Jesus, after he had been baptized, he said to him, if you're the Son of God, command these stones to become bread. Talk about getting hit upside the head. If we had been fasting for 40 days and 40 nights, I think a few of us might be hungry. I've tried to go maybe a day from time to time. I was like, I'm starving. I even go to work sometimes. If I don't eat breakfast and don't get time for lunch, I get home in the evening like, I'm about to die. James and Katie, sometimes they'll come home from school and they maybe didn't get a lot of food. I'm like, what do we have here? Katie usually goes straight for the popcorn and James goes for whatever else is in the house. You probably got kids that kind of do the same thing too. Imagine not eating for 40 days. Literal 40 days. And then having this being that we certainly understand from Scripture has control of things here on earth to say, hey, turn these stones to bread and eat. Sounds good, doesn't it? You're probably hungry. That's not what Christ did. He was faced in the worst possible moment by this tempter, this opposition, and overcame him. We see Satan going for the throat once again. But not like when Adam and Eve sinned, not like when Cain sinned, those first four people that we see in the Old Testament, Satan had an almost victory over. Satan in the New Testament tries to go against Christ. And he says, I think I got this taken care of. I'm going to take him and show him these cities of the world and cater to him there. I'm going to try to get him to eat this bread while he's hungry and try some other ways too. Couldn't do it. Satan didn't win. The power of one was Jesus, and his power was strong because he was connected to God. The power of Satan was losing. The opposition was 0-1. So who bested him? Jesus with a record of 1-0. Genesis 3:14-15 says, "The Lord said to the serpent, 'Because you have done this, you are cursed more than all cattle, more than every beast of the field. On your belly you shall go, and you shall eat dust all the days of your life. And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel.'" So what do the tapes say? Remember we talked about those football coaches that go back and watch the tapes against the opposition? Satan and Christ are opponents. Those are the sources of power we have spiritually. Satan and his seed, or has his own seed or followers. Satan's a problem enough, but Satan has those that were cast to this earth with him. Just like God has angels watching over us and ministering for him, and Michael going out and fighting battles, Satan has his own followers here too, so he is a force to be reckoned with. Satan can bruise our heels, making it hard for us to make forward progress. You know, when we try to go and do things, we try to exercise or we try to go out and teach people, there's always something that kind of gets us in the leg. Where can we be most brought down? It's in our leg. I talked about a lesson a while back. If we stub our toe, how our whole body tries to make compensation for that. But when we're trying to go forward, make forward progress for God, who's going to be going for our feet? It's the opposition. You see this in football again all the time. Tackle the legs. Tackle the legs. They grabbed them by the shoestrings. It was a shoestring tackle. Why is that? Because you cannot keep running if somebody has a hold of your foot or your shoelaces or your pants or anything like that. You're going to fall down. That's what Satan's looking for. Satan is powerful enough to be kicked out of heaven and still very powerful on earth. If he was so powerful in heaven that God said, I don't even want you up here, get away from me and I'm casting you far away, that power that the angels had to fight with, remember they were victorious, but there was a fight in heaven. It says a war broke out. It didn't say a skirmish broke out. It said a war broke out. Michael and his angels were fighting the serpent and his angels, and they were cast out. Think of the force that they were in heaven and how now they're still here, active on this earth. They are the opposition that we face. And he wants to devour us, and he is hungry. Christ has faced Satan, and he crushed his head. Remember that. We are Christians. Individually, we are one. Christ is our strength. We say it, but do we recognize it? John 1:1-3, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. The Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him, nothing was made that was made. So how do we look at Jesus, but go back to the Old Testament? Well, John tells us right here, Jesus and God were together from the very beginning. He's not just a new thing that's been added to the Godhead. John shows us that the Word was Christ before, taking human form, so he's been around since the beginning. This is important now and was in history. Sin is like a spark on gasoline. It's easily spread, it's explosive, it's destructive, it's extremely difficult to stop. And I can tell you, believe me, I think the last lesson I did, you guys saw my face was pretty scarred up. Why? Well, because I poured what I thought was a very low flashpoint fuel on some fire trying to start it. It was not low flashpoint. I put that spark there, and the next thing I remember hearing and seeing was a bunch of red coming at me and hearing things go past my ears going... That was a pretty scary thing, and it certainly caused destruction for my face at that time. Thankfully, it wasn't too bad. But the opposition, sin, Satan, and his dominion is like a spark on gasoline. This world is full of gasoline, and Satan is just a spark. It is so easy for it to just light up against us. Think about how hard we see these firefighters fighting forest fires out west. They talked about the fires in Colorado, near where I was born. Extremely hard to see. You try to get a fire started, it takes thousands of people, airplanes, helicopters, water, just trying to put a dent in that fire. The world is just like that. When Christ said, the harvest is great, the workers are few, He was talking about us individually trying to go out into this many, many fold of people in the world. Try to wrap up here. Genesis 3, 4 through 6, the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die, for God knows that the day that you eat of it, talking about the apple, the fruit of the tree, your eyes will be open and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. So the woman saw that the tree was good for food and was pleasing to the eyes, a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. She also gave to her husband with her, and he ate. The power of one is us against Satan. Each person that we talk to has their own power of one. It's either from Satan or as a willing spirit. We should not feel alone. The Lord is on our side. Remember, the scriptures tell us, if we are with God, He will be with us. If we let go of His hand, we are not connected. Romans 16:20 says, the God of peace will crush Satan under your feet shortly. The grace of our Lord Jesus Christ will be with us, with you. We have to know He is on our side. So the power of one, in summary, one times zero is us on our own. I asked you about that question in mathematics there, and some of you may have to go home and get the computer started up to remember what one times zero is. I hope that's not the case, maybe except for some of our very, very young members. Zero times anything is what? Isn't it zero? It is. You can't have something if there's nothing there to go along with it. So one times zero is us on our own. The answer is Satan will be victorious. If we're standing on our own, Satan's going to win every time. But one times one could be looked at as us with Christ. God is one, Christ is one, we are one. One times one equals what? Isn't it one? It's one whole number. Think back to that binary code. We'll get to that here in just a second too. One means something is turned on. Something is active. A process has been enacted. The answer is us being united with Christ. What's one times one times one? God, Christ, and us. Still one. One whole thing. One whole being. So Deuteronomy 31:6 says, be strong and of good courage. Do not fear or be afraid of them. For the Lord your God, He is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. 2 Kings 6:17, the power behind one. Elisha prayed. I love this passage, and again, I mentioned to you maybe a week or so ago. I kind of forgot about it. Elisha prayed, and Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. That one man was looking out one window, and he saw all these forces coming to try to do away with them, to try to kill them, try to bring them back to the king, or whatever the case may be. And Elisha was like, I'm not worried about that. Why was he not worried about that? He should have been frightened. He wasn't. He knew God was on his side, and he knew the forces of God were greater than all those forces are out there. But not that servant. He was one person too, and he looked with his human eyes, and he saw human things, and all he saw was humans that were in opposition to him. And he said, are you crazy? And Elijah prayed and said, I'm going to pray, and I'm going to let you see what I see. And he opened his eyes and like, whoa, God is big. And we got to remember that. Again, thinking about being encouraged when we try to face this world, one of us with God is so powerful. You and I are united. We are the power of the one. Hebrews 11 mentions many who realized the power of one. I'm going to keep saying that, the power of one. This whole lesson is about that. A lighthouse on the coast in stormy weather. Remember what binary numbers represent. One is what? It's a turned on action. It's a turned on activity, a process. So the power of one is turned on. Well, actually not or are we turned off. You know what or is, so my math or my teaching skills have already failed me. Are we turned off? If we're turned off, we are zero. I might be one person, but if I'm not turned on with God, if I'm not turned on with Christ and His teachings, I am zero. One times zero, again, I asked you what it was, it's zero. One times one, if we have Christ or God in our lives, is one. We are turned on. In our next lesson, Abe is going to be reminding of us, looking specifically, and I tried to hold this off until the second lesson. I usually take all the candy on my lesson and leave Abe with all the work. So I tried to help him out. We'll see how that works out for him or not. But in our second lesson, Abe will be reminding us of one who was fully showed the power of one to change the course of history from evil to good by the power of one through God and for us to gain strength from today. I also had some references to Hebrews chapter 11. We can look there and we can see some people that totally recognize the power of one in their lives and were successful with it. One of the people that we'll be discussing and revealing here on our next lesson is from that passage. And it's not far from where we started off on our discussions today. But in closing, I just want every one of you to know, I don't care what your ages are, I'm looking around this room and I can see people of many different ages. Some are men, some are women, some are boys, some are girls. Each one of you is a single power of one. If you try to stand on your own, if you try to accomplish things for spiritual things about God and Christ, but you don't have Him in your life, you're going to end up being a zero. You're going to be turned off. You're going to be turned off by the world, and you're not going to be successful. But if you reach out as a Christian, and you put your life and your trust in God and Christ, you will be activated. Whether you always have success, it's not going to be completely up to you, as we talked about in class today. You've got to spread that seed out. Sometimes it'll work out, sometimes it won't. But you have to be making sure that you are turned on. If you are not a Christian today, you can't have that multiplication work out for you. One times zero is all you're going to have. You're only going to be human. To reach the spiritual side, you have to be baptized. You have to be part of the kingdom. And this morning, as we get our song books out, we'll be singing a song of invitation. If there's something that you can let be known, or if you're interested in becoming a child of God, please let that be stated as we take our songs and sing the song of invitation.